Hello and welcome to the Golf Pro Show. Today we have a very special guest, Peter Arnott, all the way from
Emrys, Scotland.
You're very welcome, Peter. As usual, we have myself, Gary Shaw from Nace Golf Club, and Liam.
Liam here from the K Club. So looking forward to chatting to Peter. I worked with Peter for the last year or so on my game, and I think he's got great insights that we can pick his brain today and hopefully help everyone else.
Thanks for having me, gents. Thanks. I'm looking forward to the chat.
So maybe, Peter, if you want to just give us an insight into how you ended up coaching, how you ended up where you are today, and maybe how you see yourself going forward.
Long story or short?
I'll go long.
So I used to be a project manager in IT, was an okay amateur, gave up I just didn't enjoy my career, had an opportunity to change my career, took it and went back to university, coaching degree. Lucky enough at the time, one of the coaches was a guy called Graham McDowell, not the golfer Graham McDowell, golf coach. And he was like interested in practice. I was going down the rabbit hole my first year kind of doing the coaching degree of like swing stuff, like interested in like all the like technical, like reading loads of books, YouTube, all the, and like he kind of opened my eyes to the skill learning literature, the science of learning. And it was really a kind of paper that resonated the most with me that he sent was in Brazilian football and how they kind of players of the 50s, 60s, 70s emerged from favelas, uneven surfaces, very playful, lots of games-based stuff. And it was not really coach-led, it was more the environment that shaped their behaviour. So a classic example was like Garrincha, who was a like 50s, 60s winger, who dribbled on the outside of his foot, but he dribbled on the outside of his foot because he grew up in a favela that was on a side of a cliff and he couldn't be bothered running down to get the ball. So he would dribble on the side of his foot so that it wouldn't fall down the hill.
So skill level was unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the environment has shaped his skill, and they all talked about that. Even Socrates, he was more affluent. He talked about how he grew up in kind of vineyards and it was uneven surfaces and he had to be aware of these uneven surfaces. And they all talked about when they got to picked up by clubs and it was like nice, easy pitches. Basically, it was like a piece of piss.
Brilliant.
Really easy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that kind of resonated with me more in the community of practice, how I've not competed or played at a high level, but I'm a decent, reasonable amateur. Like, we grew up in an environment where it was no coaches, just playing for money every day and competing. Yeah, 30 of us just like constantly playing against each other. And
you got better that way as opposed to like...
Yeah, and trying stuff, like really experimental. Yeah. Maybe that's a model and not how to make it, I don't know, but you know, I had no intentions of that. I wanted to coach, you know, so in my early 30s, did the coaching degree. I was aware, lucky enough to have a bit of nous where in IT, when I was hiring folk, just the graduates were frankly quite useless. They had no practical experience of like, and I'd rather, you know, we'd rather get somebody that had 2-3 years experience hands-on than less qualified. So I was very aware that I needed to get experience. So probably racked up well over 1,000 hours of my coaching while I'm doing a coaching degree of like shadowing Graham, like doing lots of beginner coaching, shadowing coaches. So just trying to get my hands dirty for free, completely free, voluntary. So I'd done at least 1,000 hours coaching before I actually got paid for anything. Wow. Yeah. So that practical experience, you know, everybody's got it's the old Mike Tyson one, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And it was one of the papers, research papers that really, really kind of resonated with me when I first started actually getting paid for coaching was the, or even just coaching in general. I think it was a Paul Schwemke. He looked at expert golf coaches versus novice, and the novice golf coaches essentially had all the X's and O's. They knew a lot of the technical stuff, but they just mind dumped everybody, right?
Okay. Didn't give them what they needed and guide them through it nearly.
Well, they just gave them too much information, whereas the expert coaches give it like in little small snippets. And and anybody that's coached at any level will relate to that, you know, where you've in a session, you've given somebody too much information. But it really helped me as for a mental model of just like, okay, knowing this, like but it's also, you can read all this research, but it's actually applying it as well, isn't it? Right. They're reflecting after that, I'd mind dumped that person. So I'm waffling a bit.
No, but that's brilliant stuff.
And then just applying, skill learning stuff. So I am not PGA. So the first year I went to do the PGA, but I'd already got a coaching degree. My wife was pregnant. So basically got offered to do a master's degree. So came out of the PGA program because I was older, didn't fit what I was wanting to do. I just wanted to coach. I was lucky enough. I was at a facility, Scott Gourley, who supported that decision. So went and did a master's degree, part-time master's degree, instead of finishing my PGA.
Right.
But I've got a coaching degree and got a master's degree in the area.
I know from working with you, you're a pretty good coach, so.
Thank you very much, Liam. But I would advise any other coaches that are younger in a different situation to do the PGA stuff, because it is highly beneficial. Yeah. Just wasn't right for me at the time.
100%. I suppose I want to kind of speak about how I found you. I think the first thing I read that you had was actually the Swing Like Tiger book, but I think the name has changed now. Is it?
It's the Tiger Practice Guide. We've changed it. It's on Amazon. It's basically like a history lesson in Tiger's practice. That's basically looking at what Tiger did throughout his development and then just applying that. Ian and I have co-authored a book with Ian. He's an associate professor in kind of skill learning. And the premise is each chapter is like, what did Tiger do? Then what does the science say? And then how do you apply it yourself?
Yeah.
And the five themes are like consistency. So we debunk consistency as a word that we use here consistently from golfers. Yeah. You know, when you ask them a question and they're like, well, what do you want from this? I want to be more consistent. But there are I mean, I had it the other day there where Josh, in for a lesson, I got him, you know, there's a classic one where two dots. You've seen me do that before.
Drawing the line.
I see this here. And I got him to, on the whiteboard, put the, because he asked, he said, I want to be more consistent. And I was like, wait, put the lines together, you know, draw continuously. And obviously they were squiggly as anything. And his concept and consistency was to groove the same swing over and over again. I was like, well, you can't even do it with a line, 10 centimeters apart. So good luck with doing that with a club in your hand. So I opened up a conversation on that. Do you want me to go through the chapters? The chapters have got loads of information in them anyway.
I suppose, let's talk about how we apply that with working with me, I suppose, applying this motor learning stuff in my practice and that early on in the year. I know I got in touch with you before I went to play in the PGA playoffs, and we kind of looked at the skill sets I was going to need in Cyprus and how I would prep for them. And I know you gave me loads of games and stuff. I knew there was going to be a lot of runoffs around the greens and it was going to be firm and fast. And my short game actually got way better that time ahead of that because of the games we played, and I was sending you back what I was doing and how I was getting on at the games, and you were giving me feedback on it. So even remotely, your coaching helped me big time in just my practice that time. So kind of, I would like to get into that a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, we basically looked at what you were currently doing, where you're trying to get to. We had the end in mind. So I asked you, what are your kind of majors this year? The main one was at that time was the kind of PGA, because you could potentially get challenged tour with that. So you went out to that golf course.
I went out earlier in the year,
Cyprus,
saw the place,
and then we simulated a tournament there with one of the guys you were playing with, and we had specific goals for going out there, didn't
yeah,
we?
Can so
you talk to a little bit about that?
I knew that like the place was firm and fast. There was going to be quite a lot of breeze and it was quite hilly. So like I would naturally, I'd normally hit a lot of greens, but I knew around there I was going to miss a few more and short game was going to be really important. So we went out in kind of February and played it, and I simulated a tournament. We played it 3 rounds. The tournament was going to be 3 rounds 2 months later on, and I simulated, kept a score, applied pressure and tried to get it as similar to the environment I was going to be facing 2 months later, even when it wasn't the actual tournament. So that really helped to like make it normal once I went back to the place. I was comfortable. Like the football players playing on the slope, I was more comfortable playing that course in a tournament. It was the same idea, I guess. Like, and it was, it really helped. Yeah. Like, I know I started pretty well. I shot 3 under the first round. The weather got pretty poor the second day. I think only one person that broke par was, what's his name? The guy that won it. Scottish, Craig Lee. Yeah, he was the only person that broke par that day and went on to win it. So I think I shot 79 that day. I really struggled. But then the next day I shot 5 under, eagle the last to finish fifth and got a clutch card out of it. So it did pay off. I know I let it slip in the middle, but a lot of what we worked on, I was still able to dig deep when it was going south, and I brought it back the last day. So yeah, like it was really the applying these motor learning principles, I felt was the real help that it actually helped me transfer from my practice to the golf course. And that's kind of what I wanted to chat to you a little bit more about, like say the motor learning principles, how they're kind of nearly overlooked in golf coaching a little bit or on practice. Like people seem to go to the range, hit a bucket of balls, same target, try and block practice as the kind of buzzword that was going around for a while. But I found that wasn't really working. It wasn't, if I hit 57 irons in a row, that's not what it was like on a golf course. So can you speak to how someone can look at their practice and maybe what they could add to make it more real?
I mean, our whole kind of Stuart, Ian and I's consultancy, the practicethinkers.com is around transfer. Mm. And it's looking at like all the things that you have. And so we just literally recorded a podcast this morning, the three of us, on that and like belief systems. Okay. So like historically in the kind of skill learning, science of learning, motor learning, whatever you call it, and historically they used to take things away from the environment. So like the 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of the design, the research design was taking all the stimulants that you would get in performance away. So like emotion, they would take away some of the environmental cues, i.e. water, you know, like, so they would do it more lab-based.
Right.
And then research the subjects on that and then try and take it back to the environment. Whereas you find a lot of the time, and that's analogous to, and you see a lot of maybe coaching practices or even belief systems with players, is that I've got to kind of ingrain this movement on the range first, right? Mm. And then it'll transfer on the golf course. Mm. Whereas like, again, I'm biased because I am in this space, but I consult a lot of golf coaches and golfers that are struggling to transfer that to the golf course, basically because it's not similar.
Yeah.
It's not like, if you look at the actual research on transfer, it would suggest that it needs to replicate in some way what you're doing in performance.
Mm.
Yeah.
And again, even with research, you can see it in practice as well. Like how many times do you go to the range, work on a move, and then it didn't happen on the golf course? It just like goes out the window.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of players doing this at the moment, and we've talked about this, Liam, is I love the Jim Furyk story of like when he was struggling on the golf course or in tournament play, go to his home course and try and shoot low scores and find a feel on the golf course to take it to the range.
Yeah.
So he's got a feel from the golf course experimenting and then taking it to the range. So many players that I consult and hear about, you know, from art, like they take a feel from the range to the golf course, and a lot of the time it falls in its arse.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know from experience.
Because again, it's like emotionless. There's no target there, flat lie. So it's like, how can we integrate? Even like, and I get it's winter, so we're maybe indoor or we're on the range, like, but can you simulate as much as possible, like, performance, you know, a specific target? I mean, again, we're talking about the history of Tiger's practice. There's clues everywhere in these guys' practice. We, you know, Faldo talked about targeting and having like a 150-yard hole at his home course and shaping it to that hole. There's a specific target. And when he was on the range, he's like there's a specific target there and you're getting specific feedback from that, right? Tiger used a Bushnell all the time and a rangefinder all the time when he was, you know, Hank Haney talks about that in his book, how, you know, he would pick specific yardages when he was on the range. He's hitting to a yardage.
Yeah, he was very
intentional. I mean, that sounds simple, and it is simple, but the actual behaviours and practices I don't see often. And even just behaviour, you know, I've just come back from Q school, final stage Q school, and the behaviours in the warm-up, and most of the players were like, they're not going through their performance routines, they're not... You know, like, I'm not seeing the similar behaviours that you would see in the golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I get that some are just warming the body up, but maybe you want to warm the mind up as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you would nearly recommend having a performance game on the range to simulate and get you sharp, get you actually focused before going to the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be a ton of balls. Could be 2-3, you know, but like, it's like, what, think about the behaviours that, I mean, just even a couple of players I consulted recently watching the warm up, and like, I've seen them on a golf course and they've got specific routines on the golf course. They read it from certain angles. When they're warming up, they're not reading it from the same angles.
Yeah. I get it. Like, I was like that. I remember when you came over to the K Club to look at me putting as well. Like, first of all, like, my behaviours around reading putts was, they were abysmal, like, but the feedback you gave me, I now apply that all the time, and my putting's been so much better. Like, early in the year, I didn't have a great kind of first half of the year, but once I kind of got these behaviours and processes in place, kind of from the middle of the season, I think I had 4 wins in PGA Pro-Ams and finished well in clutch events and stuff like that. So most of it wasn't like, nothing changed in my golf swing or what I was doing too much, but it was how I was actually... The process of, I know they say routine and that, but it's more than just going through the motions. It was what I was reading and getting better at that, picking up information, really.
100%. Well, what we spent 3-4 days together now. The last session was at K Club. It's all been on the golf course or short game area. Putting, at least, has been in context.
Yeah.
We're lucky enough the weather's been okay. And, I mean, you know, when we seen you last, you were aiming, what, 70 yards right on every shot?
Pulling across, body not turning. Looked like I was trying to hit a big draw, but I was hitting a weak fade.
Yeah, you were struggling a little bit, weren't you? But like, wouldn't have seen that on the range as much as we did in the golf course. Like, you were aiming quite a bit right.
Yeah. The range would have given me the cue of where to aim, whereas on the tee box.
Yeah, with the mat and stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. But so you were. We were able to discover that straight away.
And then we put some specific feedback for you. You can use alignment rods. You're okay to use that, but let's do it in context.
Yeah.
Your club face was open. What did I say to you?
Well, it was the Lee Trevino feel to get that back. Right. But we were doing it on the golf course was the main thing.
But I didn't, like, you already knew that. I just asked you questions on, like, how would you close the face? And you're like, oh, I've got this movement I've done before. Like, well, let's do it.
Yeah, I wasn't learning something completely new. Yeah.
Exactly,
And like, I think the weak club face came from my alignment getting right. I had to pull across it and hit these fades.
100%. And strike was off. Yeah, I mean, so... I mean, it was because I hadn't seen you in about 2-3 months. You know, you were, but we've put. If you talk, what are the specific? I think the important point here is you need feedback in learning. You need, you know. So, what feedback do you have now when I'm, and what we put in place when I'm not there?
Well, we've a blueprint.
I don't want to be a crux. Like,
we've a blueprint of drills and feels to do to calibrate this stuff. So
can you talk to it?
Yeah. So, like, when we were on the course, like, my feel was that I was miles open and then trying to hit a draw from there pretty much. And it was flying pretty neutral. So my feel from standing close and then coming over was, like, completely off. So as soon as when I was feeling open, I was probably closer to square, and then feeling like I was hitting a draw, it got me back to neutral. and it was that Lee Trevino feel, and using a scaling system to get that calibrated. So say if I've done it a lot in a row, my feel might be doing it 3 out of 10 versus when I had to do it, first of all, it was 10 out of 10. I had to do a lot to get myself back to.
Yeah. So let's talk to the scaling system that we gave you. We said like 10, like on the scale was like crazy Lee Trevino, shut the face. One was like your old movement.
Exactly.
And then we explored that in context in lots of different shots.
Different eyes, ball below my feet, ball above my feet, down and, slopes, up slopes.
And then you're getting specific feedback. The divot instantly changed when we did this, didn't it? And the strike.
The ball flight was way stronger, which would have been my normal ball flight, but just because my alignment drifted, it got weaker. It was the ball was going 10, 15 yards shorter with an iron. So I was clubbing up loads and was like, maybe it's just because it's getting cold. But it was actually just because I was, I don't know, I figured out how to hit it straight and get it in play with what I was doing. But that's why the ball was going shorter. Then once I actually recalibrated, the divots were shallower, but they were strong. Like there was, I wasn't losing shaft lean, I was compressing the ball, but it wasn't by trying to get my hands in a certain position. It was just through using the feels to recalibrate myself. And then all of a sudden it was like, I know what this feel is. I've done it all my life. I've just kind of got out of line a little bit, but I was able to play well straight away after it. Went to have a bit, and played nicely the week later.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it transferred into performance pretty quickly because we've done it and, you know, you won the following week, didn't you? And that's not, sounds like we're blowing smoke up each other's arse here, but you know what I mean?
Not a complete miracle, But
it just transfers a bit quicker. And what else did we put in? We put in like occasionally doing the bad way so that you could feel it as well,
so you
didn't
feel
we?
The difference, you know, when you do the bad move.
So like aiming miles right and like keeping the face open, right? So you can like then self-coach yourself.
Yeah.
So like it's building awareness in context on the golf course.
Yeah. Nip out for 2-3 holes after work. I've been kind of doing it.
And that was our plan, isn't it? It's like, let's not go in the range here. Like if you can get 2-3 holes, much better. Chuck a couple of balls down.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And like,
and then I think we need to talk about how much I schooled you on the short game.
I learned an awful lot that day. I got out of line with there, but I was aiming right and was underneath. My attack angle was shallow. I wasn't striking them. We were getting steep and left, finishing low.
With the chip?
With the chipping, yeah. Okay. But it was it was all in context, hitting different shots on the course that I could then like, oh, sure, that's the feel. I've got it more than it was just chipping, chipping, chipping the same shot over and over. I was doing the stuff to different shots hole after hole. And you were testing me then. Once I felt like I got it, you kind of started to challenge me a bit more and see how I'd do with a tricky shot off a downslope over a bunker and stuff like that. So it was really good, and I pitched great the next week. I need to really be doing more of it, right? To be honest, trying to get out when the weather's good and make the most of it. But that's kind of how the practice has been and the training has been, and it's been working. So try and elevate it now into next year again.
I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's how you bring it to life, is like, for you, that's specifically for you, Liam. Yeah. And there's stuff that we've done that hasn't transferred. I'm trying to think what it is, but
some of the stuff, most of it I'm pretty happy with. There was, what haven't I done? You'll be the one that'll probably give me feedback when you see me that you're not doing this right, but I feel pretty happy with most of the work we did.
I mean, we explored a few concepts. The short game's taking a wee bit longer, but again, that's time constraints for you as well, isn't it? And that's a hard part, like working part-time,
And it's the volume of it.
Play full-time,
That's one question I wanted to ask you when you spoke with the Jim Furyk, finding the feel and then bringing it to the range. Is that to get the volume up to the right level? You know, like say if you're on the golf course, you're not hitting as many shots with that feel, so you find the feel there and then bring it to the range. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I, again, without having them in front of me, I would presume that is the case. Yeah, but maybe the ability to explore it a lot more, volume wise. But again, that feel has worked in context, and he's bringing it back. One could argue is, why the hell are you going back to the range?
Yeah.
What
you've got to
stay. Range forward,
yeah.
Actually, this reminds me of, I know I asked you for some questions when Michael Bannon was doing a talk at the K Club for the PGA GM. and I had lunch with him. He ended up just randomly sitting down with us for lunch, and I asked him a few questions about Rory, and he said Rory would often, when he's practicing, play in the morning and then work on something he found on the range after. So it's obviously a pretty similar idea to what you're saying about Jim Fiore, but Rory practices that way as well. So that was just a great nugget that Michael shared with us that time.
And there you go. There's clues everywhere.
There is, it's to have the awareness and the knowledge to kind of like, that's what that is, and apply it. And stories like that is where it will click with a client when you're working with them coaching or.
Yeah, I think what helps, like obviously we've all got our own biases, but if you know a little bit about this transfer stuff, you can unpick some of these stories and go, well, that makes sense, right? Instead of like it just washing over you. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
What else? Harrington, you spoke, like, you got some nuggets from him.
I played with him in April. And say about even short game stuff, like he was saying about practicing wedges, he was using the TrackMan combine to get his yardages, but he was aware that on the golf course, he hits the wedges 2-3 yards further. So he knows from experience and playing it, like when he's in the heat of it and there's a bit of adrenaline and he's engaged more, he hits them a little further. So he does a lot indoors this time of year. He spoke about like when he's back in Dublin, the weather's pretty poor, ground conditions get pretty wet, so he is still aware that what he's working on indoors is going to be different outdoors. And I suppose like it's taken that awareness level to really apply it to your practice. And would you have any recommendations, say, with this time of year practicing indoors, of like games or anything that you would say, like, how do we make it more real? That was one question we kind of wanted to ask.
I mean, I can share the story that we did with Jack, but his outdoors, he won at Slaley Hall this year, and basically he was like simulating the golf course Slaley Hall. But he was having 45-second break between each shot,
so he wouldn't just hit shot. Yeah. It was making it
and
more.
Then behaviorally he's doing all the stuff that he would do in performance. So, you know, can you space it a little, can you simulate, you know, more golf, like can you have drive, you know, even play golf courses. I'm okay with zooming the lens in, like you and I did for 3 hours, just short game only. But then we zoomed the lens out and like played some golf. Took it into context, and then, you know, when you were across here, we zoomed the lens in short game for a couple hours and then gave you a task on the golf course. Task was specifically putting quite a lot of pressure on your short game, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I had to play 9 holes, finish out the hole, then drop a ball outside the green and try and get that up and down. And if I got it up and down, it was a par. If it took me 3 to get down, it was a bogey if I parred the hole. So it added on to my actual score. It's a great game. I played it playing against Gary. We have little matches doing it, and a few of the other pros around the Caitlin. I often do that game just because it's way better on the golf course.
So we're putting it into context. We're zooming the lens in, but we're still playing golf. So when you were across, we paid for, I don't know, 20, 30 euros or whatever it was. I can't remember.
Enough to make us a little bit uncomfortable that it meant something.
Yeah, and then I gave you failed the task on the last shot, the ninth hole, so it was relevant all the way to the ninth hole. I gave you I gave you an out. I often do this. I learned this from Ed Colin.
So you gave me a chance, a lifeline.
Give you a chance to redeem yourself, because golf gives you that chance the next day. But I put you off a downhill lie, didn't I? Like, I give you a real stinker.
Off a tight lie to a tough shot, yeah.
Yeah. And how did you...
You tested me.
How did you fare?
I nearly chipped it in. I hit a good... That was the one around just the edge of the clubhouse there. I nearly chipped it in. You even mentioned to me straight after, it's like, all of a sudden my intention, my focus and that was through the roof. Like, nothing was going to distract me, because it meant something. This shot was to save my, I think it was for 50 quid. It mattered. So you did give me that chance, and it really, you know, my behaviors and everything, you were kind of testing that as well. So you were able to see it was tournament like in training. So it's
Woodsworth. Yeah, and then we debriefed at the end. You were like, I need more training like this, don't you? Because you were like so much more, and the intensity was much higher, wasn't
it? Yeah, my head was a bit sore afterwards from focusing, but it was brilliant. It was like in a 9-hole game, just going out to play. It was like I was in the back line of a tournament, just because I was uncomfortable in some of the spots you put me in, dropping the ball, but it was real. It applied to a score, and it mattered. So I enjoyed that, now, to say the least.
Gary, you got any questions? You got just Liam and I could riff for hours.
Yeah. Something I look at a lot is presence on the golf course. Trying to be present over a shot. Do you have any views on that, or do you know, trying to bring yourself back to the shot at hand, and any techniques you'd use for that with your players? Is that something you look at? Or if somebody does come off the present, is there ways you could bring yourself back? Or
yeah, I mean, there's obviously mental strategies you could go through, you know, like mindfulness. I quite like a lot of the stuff in mindfulness, you know, like noting. Don't know if you've done noting before, but it's like essentially noting when you're walking up the ball, you know, the wind in your face, the grass under your feet, whatever it is, your little simple exercises where you're present. I'm not a sports psych, I'm a practice coach, so I would say I've got the, obviously dealing with elite level players, you do dabble in the basics of psychology. But yeah, I would say like what's helped is just little strategies like that, like performance routines, just looking at people's behaviours beforehand, and then testing it in multiple different environments where, you know, maybe we are putting consequences on it as well. And does their behaviour change? When it does, then there's an opportunity for intervention there and discussing it. You know, like what we've done, we did with Liam and his putting. You know, none of the behaviours that we've seen in performance were in his putting practice. We had great discussions on that, but I wouldn't have seen that if I didn't see him in the real environment, you know, and what he was doing. So roundabout way to answer your question.
Tiger used to do hypnotism and things like that before going out.
Yeah, I mean, again, he talks to that, but I don't know specifically what he's doing. They are, I think, again, trying to get somebody's training environment with all the stuff that would potentially be in performance, or potentially distractions, like getting them a switch on and off again. What do I mean by that? Well, like, potentially I've done in training groups where I know certain individuals that have trained before struggle with slow play, so we'll get the players in the groups out in front of them purposely playing slow to annoy them. And even just put patches in the group like that are really like rubbish with their behaviour. So
I remember when we were over at Swanson and we were out on the golf course, you were talking to me about my pickup of information walking onto the green, and maybe 2-3 holes later you started trying to tell me stories and that try and distract me and get me off. And then now I did hold the putt, but you called me out on the next tee. I was like, your pickup of information, I could just see you weren't paying attention, you were chatting to me as I was going to play the putt or hit the putt. So kind of stuff, being intentional and what you're seeing coming onto the green, slopes, like you were even talking about like the different grasses and on some of the greens, how this is like, obviously it wasn't grain, but it was some of the spots that was, you know, we're not playing on perfect golf course all the time, but some of it was a little bit hairier than the other. This is going to be a slow putt or not, and it's picking up that information. If you're so in the zone looking at that stuff, you're very present, you know, you're not, your head's not elsewhere. Exactly. So it's nearly your entire behaviors on the golf course of actually reading the situation, I feel like keeps me very present anyway when I'm doing.
Yeah, that's a good point. So that's more, it's interesting when you ask that question out of context, Gary. I'm struggling to remember all the stuff I do on the golf course, but to like the good example, Liam, that's the sort of stuff I'm doing with like the pickup of information on a golf course is he's quite poor. People aren't as present. You know, there may be, you know, we talked about a certain individual that we'll not use the name, but Liam, but like a trigger where we know somebody that's been a very good golfer that has specific behaviours that are very beneficial to performance. And that kind of story resonated with you. What was the story again?
It was Jim the something or other. So he was quite cutthroat and like he'd be playing along with pals of his or that, and they'd be out for a game. And when he got like within 20 yards of his ball, he just shut up. He wouldn't talk to them. And like people used to hate it, but he was zoning in on the shot he had at hand, taking in everything he could. And he didn't care if anyone enjoyed his company or not. He was trying to play a good shot and get himself in the right headspace and have all the information that he could pick the right shot and then execute. Yeah. So it was Jim the something or other that we will not mention.
And exactly. And to Gary's question, to be able to do that, what have you got to be?
Very aware and very present. Yeah.
There you go. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are little tricks in that and stuff that you can do on the golf course like that to get you present. I like using them when I'm playing as well.
Hey, little cues and triggers to remind yourself, because we're not robots, is it? Are we? We're not. You are, like anything, behaviours drift occasionally.
Yeah, and sometimes you start to notice towards the end of a tournament you're getting tired. You can just be more mindful of that you need to be more intentional with the pickup information. Some stuff, like, I know it's been aware of myself and been present. I know towards the end of a tournament, and we've seen it when I've been out practicing or doing days of doing the K club, and I get tired towards the end, my body slows down and then the club turns over. So I have to be more intentional towards the end of a tournament when I'm tired to drive through the shot a bit more.
That's a specific cue.
We
came up with that cue in training, because you'd described it in performance and we've seen it at the end of the day in training as well. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So again, it's back to that presence, being aware, exploratory behaviour, not practicing a perfect environment all the time, practicing an environment that is never going to perfectly simulate a performance like environment, but it can get close.
Absolutely. I felt it like pretty intently on some of them games we were playing for a bit of cash and that. So it does get close. And I suppose like if we were just doing an hour coaching session on the range, we wouldn't have picked that up. You know, we wouldn't have noticed that I start getting slow and turning it over. So it was actually doing it on the golf course over the time period that was longer than you would be playing around. But you notice the behaviors more as you're getting tired, as you're worn down after a full day of training. Like, you're more tired probably after a full day's training than you would be in a tournament. So it exemplified them tendencies, I suppose, to learn from.
Number one thing I see at elite level players is when you start training in a more, like a less comfortable environment, if they're not used to it, they're cognitively done really, really quickly. They just can't sustain, and nobody should be able to sustain 3-4 hours in a row. You know, this ability to switch on and off again, but you see somebody that's maybe practicing the range, just a golf swing, that's nice and comfortable there, right? And you take them into a training, and I'm not alone in saying that. It's other colleagues that do similar to me describe this as well, where like individuals that are introduced to these basically transfer training that's more real, struggle to concentrate for sustained periods of time. It is far more mentally demanding, which performance is. Now, you know, if you're an elite level golfer, even an amateur golfer, think about how tired you are mentally at the end of the day. You know, if you played 18 holes, right, in a tournament, and then does your training ever replicate that? And if the answer is no, then maybe you're not practicing in a way that's going to transfer best. Now, there is time and a place to do that as well. You don't want to be doing that 2 days or a day before a 4-round tournament.
You want to be fresh coming into it.
Yeah.
Well, you could do it at a smaller scale, just little competitions against someone for 5 hours.
Yeah, I know.
Something smaller. It's not to be as long, I suppose. Some of it was to get, still be in a performance mindset coming into it and thinking that way, but not worn out and ran down by the time you started playing in the tournament?
A basic principle like learning is like, I mean, also stress and the right amount of stress on the system, i.e. you human, from fancy words here, but ecologically representative environments, so basically more like the golf course, the demands on you, if they are close, like they are stretching you and stressing you, there's adaptations. You're forcing yourself to adapt there, you know, emotionally, physically, like you've described there, Harrington hitting it further, you know, in performance. That's a common theme that we hear. Yeah, and I've seen training as well, and performance is, you know, there's more adrenaline, so you hit it further, and sometimes you swing it slower because there's boundaries in front of you and you
your tentative or
your reaction, the task changes your movement pattern. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose it's been aware of that. And if you don't train that and practice in that environment, you're not going to know when you get into the tournament setting.
Well, you get slapped in the face essentially. Yeah, right. And a lot of golfers that face that in a kind of mini tour or whatever level they're at, then a lot of them, because their belief system is like maybe more towards a more comfortable environment, they run back to the range and work on their swing. Right, and then it's like a rinse and repeat. Okay, you go play a tournament, you get slapped in the face again, or run back to the range and try and make it more comfortable again. Yeah,
and a lot of the time they might be exploring something new on the range, so it's adding another element to make it hard, I suppose. I'll give you
a specific example of somebody's belief systems, and it's changed now, but Karen, a woman that I teach who's won the Scottish Seniors for the last 3 years, the first time we took her on the golf course, and her belief system was all swing when I first started coaching her. Coached her for about 5-6 years now. And first time I took her on the golf course, and she hit a hybrid about 40-50 yards left off an uphill lie, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what happened there? And she's like, my swing failed me. I'm like, I asked her, would you ever hit a shot like that in the range? And she's like, never. I was like, well, how can it be your swing then?
Yeah, you wouldn't. So it was the environment and how she read the situation that was kind of the problem.
Yeah, it was on a severe uphill lie. She hadn't read the lie. Yeah, obviously it changed the movement. The wind was in off the left. There was lots of stuff going on that she hadn't adapted to.
Mm, brilliant. And so she has changed her kind of outlook on that and how she trains now?
Absolutely. Mm. I would do more stuff on the golf course. We'd simulate stuff. There were tournaments coming up. Yeah, we still work in swing, no doubt, we do, yeah.
Mm.
And that's not to say that working in swing is not beneficial, it is. I still do that. We've done it, Liam, haven't we? But it's can we always think about transfer? How's this going to transfer at the golf course?
Absolutely. Interestingly now, this week, Tiger's coming back. He kind of hasn't played in 6 months competitively. Or when was the Masters? Yeah, pretty much... even longer. How do you reckon, not exactly like no one knows how he'll do, but like in practice, I know he spoke previously about like practicing in a PGA Tour event ahead of a major. Do you reckon that he's playing quite high level money games or something to get him ready for coming back this week? Or what would you do, or would you recommend someone like Tiger that hasn't played in 6 months?
I can only talk to, because obviously for the book we've researched Tiger's interviews, books, as much as possible. I can talk to what I do know historically about Tiger. I don't think he'll be playing big money games, but he uses his mind and his imagination, and he will be simulating the shots that he needs.
Mm.
He'll be. I would imagine he'll be playing a lot of golf, 18 holes, like building that match fitness up. His mate Rob talked about that recently, talking about how Tiger, you know, purposely simulates the grasses and gets the grasses the same way as his house. Yeah, for
nice,
like short game
nice
shot.
Thing to be able to do. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. But so I would imagine, again, I'm just from what the information that we've researched and what he's talked about previously and his colleagues or friends have talked about previously, he'll be simulating as much as possible.
Mm. And like, he hasn't played competitively, I'm just thinking for like, now that it's winter in Ireland, say like even amateurs and stuff that'll be listening to this, their first event will be in, could be in April now, and it's December now. How would they apply some of what Tiger's kind of doing in his off season, which was obviously when he had surgery? Like, how would they apply practice principles now to get ready for the season in 4 or 5 months' time, potentially?
I mean, obviously, your time, same as Scotland, depends what level you're at, but I would try, and most of my consulting stuff's kind of more elite level play, so more trying to play money games or play games competitively against other players, trying to keep that match sharpness. I was on a consultancy call last few weeks, and a coach that said we didn't need to worry about performance in the next 6 months, and we had quite a stern conversation. So it was like thinking about it from like, yeah, winter's not just about working your swing. If you're hitting it good coming into winter, then a lot of stuff I'll do, Malcolm, the club champion here, we did swing stuff for the first couple of years, worked.
Swing's in a good place.
We were doing lots of stuff on TrackMan, you know, performance centre, simulating golf courses and training, like looking at the behaviours on the range. Is it ideal? No. But it's the best of what we've got. Mm. Yeah. And mm-hmm. we're not. And if we do see anything in these, like in swing wise, it's like a 5 minute check in whilst we're doing these performance games. Yeah.
So then it'll, I like that. The idea is that that's going to transfer as opposed to like going down a rabbit hole of trying to think internally about where you're.
That's that for that specific individual. There will be certain individuals that need swing work in the winter, and that, you know, that's fine. Yeah, it's like, okay, let's go and explore this. But then it's looking at, well, how are we going to transfer this? Yeah, I mean, I spent 3 hours on Monday morning with a pro who's making swing changes and struggling a wee bit. So we took him on the golf course and showed him, like, did the kind of feels and things he was working on and multiple different lies, situations, yeah, and show them how to practice and how this is going to transfer different clubs, you know. So we're getting them hit a full shot and like a one club less, what felt easier, harder. Like ball below feet was the hardest to do the feel on, ball above feet was easiest for him. Yeah.
Right, so you'll be getting him practicing more with the ball below his feet, hitting them shots.
So I think from what he was doing technically, you know, like what we see, it was kind of like what your feel, like his divot was quite shallow, but compressing the ball. So I would say you probably didn't want to spend too much time in the room of like ball below feet, because it was promoting maybe some tendencies in the swing that but it's still adding it in occasionally. Yeah.
And he was saying,
it feels so different in this light. And well, it should do, because it's ball below feet. Yeah.
You're going to have to adjust feel slightly. Yeah.
Yeah, but what's the task in front of me as well? Yeah.
The other thing I was like with this, like variability is very important. Like, so if you're working on a move, you can't be just able to do it on a driving range mat. You know, you're going to have these different lies. And like, we were actually chatting just ahead of today, and hearing yesterday Tiger spoke about hitting like 100 to 200 four footers in a row. And I was it's a great test, obviously, of his focus for that length of time. But I was wondering, say if he hit four different four footers 100 times and went through his whole process of reading the putts and that would be even better practice, I would have imagined.
Well, we don't know. Maybe he is doing that, though. That's the thing. Maybe he is doing that. We don't. I mean, that in itself, I spoke to a messenger, a putting coach yesterday on that, you know, and asked him specifically, do you give many clients that exercise? And he's like, to be fair, he came back and said, I don't know. But like, if he's doing it to random holes and then it's even more impressive that he's hitting 200 in a row in the middle of the hole. Yeah. I mean, I had a quick look at his stats from 4'9" on the PGA Tour before we came on this call. I mean, he's decent, but he's not separating himself that much. Yeah, I mean, there's he's top 20 for four footers some of the seasons. I looked when he was at his peak, and they had data, kind of in the noughties. But there were some years he was like from 4 feet, he was outside the top, I think 70, 80.
Wow.
From 4 feet and in. So I was just curious to see what the data says. He's telling me, yeah. But
it probably still gave him a lot of confidence.
Absolutely. I mean, he was, you know, when you look at him, strokes gained, putting in all those years, he was still pretty high up the list. I was top a couple of times as well, I think.
But it was his iron play that kind of separated him, really.
I mean, that was where he gained the most, but I think he gained in a lot of areas, you know. He was that bloody good. Yeah. So the 4-footers, we don't know specifically what he's doing, but I mean, it shows you his level of dedication. Would I prescribe that to somebody that's coming along to me? Probably not.
They wouldn't quite have the same mindset as Tiger, I'd imagine.
Well, if Tiger, Tiger comes along to me and he's doing that drill and his putting's bloody good, it's like, well, why change it?
Yeah.
Unless you physically can't do it anymore, like you're getting a bad back or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Fair enough.
Is it fair to say Tiger's had a few different swings through his career? Like he's, completely restructured his whole swing a few times, changed coaches. What do you think of that?
I mean, again, having researched him a bit, I think it, like, you know, Butch Harmon, one of his ex-coaches, talks about this. I think he does it because of boredom sometimes as well, like, right. Just to keep himself stimulated. You know, it's the old, Earl's dad pulled Hank Haney up at Tiger's wedding and said, basically, like, look, let's be honest, Tiger could have won any swing, you know.
Didn't give Hank any credit, yeah.
No, I think he was, you know, he said it in a lighthearted way, but I think there's relevance to that. I mean, one could argue, you know, it's potentially stagnated him for a couple of years occasionally.
Chatting about, like, it would have been like he got bored and it was the challenge point that, like, he needed, he needed something to keep him motivated, keep him going and test himself.
Well, by the reports of what Butch says, that, you know, why he was sacked is Tiger came to him after he won the four majors and said, what's next? And Butch is like, well, just keep doing the same thing. You've just won four majors. And Tiger didn't apparently like that answer. Okay. Yeah.
He wanted something new and keep working. Yeah.
Never said.
So obviously it worked out for him, but there's some individuals that maybe with that mindset and, you know, go down rabbit holes that maybe aren't necessary. Yeah.
Do you think, though, the fact when he was changing swing, the way he practiced, the way he trained, his awareness is what made that so good and that he was able to change it and bring it to the golf course?
100%, because he was training a lot in the golf course. You look at what he was doing, you know, he's picking specific targets. Hank Haney talks about him taking breaks after 20, 30 balls as well. You know, I've heard Hank Haney said that, you know, at a conference, you know, in the noughties, he wasn't allowed to talk about Tiger's practice. The only thing he could say was that that Tiger could hit 200 balls in a day. Yeah. Wow. So what does that tell you? You know, if he's only hitting 200 balls, he's maybe been more specific on what he's doing.
So he wasn't just beating. He was hitting shots on the range to a target.
Yeah.
And it being invested in that.
Yeah, exactly. So that would, again, not knowing exactly what he did, but that would align itself to transferring a bit better.
Some of the other stuff I just want to ask you with Tiger would obviously spend time with Seve and Alatabal and learning shots from them. And this is a good, we've spoken to me a lot about this, but how he picked up stuff from Tiger and Alatabal. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
I mean, his basic concept is, as human beings, we're designed to mimic. You know, Ian talks about, you know, in the book in chapter 3 about even as, you know, newly born, we're mimicking our studies done this, we're mimic our mother's eye movements immediately. So we're born to watch and learn and observe off others. So Tiger was doing that and has done it throughout his career, is, you know, not just movement based, it's more strategy. He talks a lot about Raymond Floyd, learning from him at the Masters and like strategy wise on that. And how Raymond Floyd taught him lots of shots from different areas of the Augusta. Specifically with Seve and Ollie, they all had the same coach at the same time, Harman, and Harman was getting them to play with each other a lot, and so Tiger was learning as a teenager off Seve and Elazabal short game stuff. But he talked about how good an environment that is. And he talked about how even Seve hitting bunker shots and Tiger was trying to hit them cut shots and like spinning left and right. And Tiger's like, Seve's like, what are you doing? And Seve showed him like, you know, he's trying to roll them like a putt, you know, and like not put side spin on them. And Tiger, like, obviously, but then Tiger elaborated, I think it's his 1997 or the 97 Masters book that he wrote kind of 10 years ago. We talked about how he, when he was learning off Seve and Ollie, couldn't do some of the movements or shots that were doing, but he made it his own. So he looked at them and went, right, well, Seve's hitting that shot straight. How do I make that my own? Right?
How do he goes and explores it.
So it's more task based. It's not movement based. Like, okay, I'm going to try and get this ball not to spin left or right. How do I do that out of a bunker? Yeah.
Mm. So you explore different fields to do that. Felt comfortable for him, or
exactly. And he's on record as saying that. He says, I couldn't do some of the stuff Seve was doing, so I made it my own. And we, in our chapter 3, we say basically it's copy, edit, and paste. Like, go watch, like, you know, we got you doing it at the Irish Open this year, didn't we?
Watching some great short game players, like, it was good, class.
Some great short game players, and see if you can pick up anything from them. Yeah?
Yeah,
what they're doing behaviorally. You know, had Simon Dashen on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, and his practice history. He talked about Pete Cowan telling him to go and watch a French putter in the early noughties, and how, like, for 2 hours he watched them, and it was like a masterclass in like practice, basically. Brilliant. You know, and he took loads from that. So it's not just movement based; it's maybe behavioral based as well. No, that's what Simon talked about. He talked about playing with Ernie Els and how Ernie Els, like, when he bogeyed a really kind of quite simple par five, and how behaviorally he just bounced back and birdied the next hole. And Simon was taken aback by that, because he said, I would have been like steam coming out of my ears, like,
easy, and it was just chilled and got on.
So it's maybe looking at like people that you admire. It could be the club champion at your course, or and like, what can you learn from them? I think that's, like, to me, like, somebody that's interested in mastery are just greedy bastards. They're greedy for information, like, greedy
just pick up info everywhere and learn from everyone they can.
Little magpies, but then it's making it your own. It's not. And like discarding the stuff that doesn't work for me.
And Mickelson even spoke about that in a recent article he did. He helped a player get ready for stage 2 of Q school.
That was amazing.
It was a great article. And he said about like, if you can't do it in a couple of shots, throw that away. Like, I'll throw a lot of stuff at you here, but he said, like, if you can't do it straight away, there's no point. Throw it away and work on the stuff that does stick and does improve you. Now, I'd say your man was obviously a pretty high skill level. He could do a lot of this stuff. So maybe some amateurs and stuff playing would probably need to do a little bit more than a couple of shots at it. But it's the same idea. It's the same idea. Same principle.
Yeah, is that what you sell your packages on, Liam?
A couple of shots. Nah, my head will be scattered trying to teach you.
Are we going to see you on YouTube soon? 2 shots to my swing mastery so far.
He's a digital marketer, so I might be on to him to do me up something. So, Peter, that's been a great chat. Like, I think we're about an hour now, so I think everyone will have a lot to digest in our chat here today. We'd a lot of kind of situational stuff that we've obviously worked on, but it is applying the motor learning and skill acquisition science to practice and training and learning new movements. So I really really enjoyed the chat, and I've been enjoying working with you, and we'll keep it going.
Yeah, brilliant. No, thanks for having me on, James, really appreciate it. If anybody wants to get in touch, just practicethinkers.com. We've got a new book out, Tiger Practice Guide. It's on Amazon.
Brilliant. I'd highly recommend picking it up, lads. Thanks for listening. Look, we'll chat to you again soon.
Thanks, Peter.